Well, to begin with, I'm talking about public clouds. There are people who think that there's such a thing as private clouds, and there are people who think there's no such thing as private clouds, and I'm agnostic. But usually we're talking about the thing that we think of as public clouds. In that sense, you give up control, and there's a real transparency problem with cloud computing. And there are a few different dangers. I went over them pretty extensively in the last session, but briefly, there are, if you think of as sysadmins your usual attack vectors, think of these as legal attack vectors, ways that data may get out with or without your knowledge, but certainly without your control. For instance, the government could show up in an investigation and ask for your data, and you may have different data than you thought you had. You may think you've deleted things that weren't deleted. You may think you hadn't deleted things that were deleted. You may be the recipient of a subpoena. Your cloud provider could be the recipient of a subpoena, and nobody would tell you. And those are the things I mean by how dangerous it is. Now, I'll point out that that's not to say that you shouldn't do things that are dangerous. I go cave diving. But I like my dangers well-defined. And there are certainly business risks. There are things we do every day that are dangerous. We cross the road, we drive. Driving is probably one of the most dangerous things you do, but you do it. And at the very least, you should know what the dangers are and, if possible, have a plan to deal with them once they move from theoretical to actual. So that's what I meant.
Okay. Bill?
So I guess I only partially agree that clouds are dangerous. And in many ways, I think they're likely to be less dangerous than the alternative. If you don't put your data out on a cloud, if you're not using a cloud, you're doing one of two things. You're either storing it in your own data center, and a lot of companies don't have the resources to do a data center right. You're not going to have it backed up. You're not going to have security on it, et cetera. If you're a larger company, you may have the resources to go and make it right, but at least if you go to a cloud and you select your provider right, and again, I'm talking about a public cloud here, you will have the ability to negotiate some SLAs, and you will be able to have some economies of scale in terms of the investments in going and protecting your data, your IT operations from things like attack and such. The second alternative that you'd have if you're not going to a cloud and you're not doing it in-house is to go to an outsourcer. And an outsourcer really isn't fundamentally different than a cloud other than you're in a cage as opposed to sharing a system. There are some implications that come from the fact that you're sharing an infrastructure, and that's something that I think we'll get into in a bit, because I really believe that lawyers, believe it or not, have contributed to making that a more dangerous infrastructure, and we can talk about that one in a couple of minutes. But by and large, if you go to a cloud and you pick your providers right and get your SLAs, you really shouldn't be in a different position than you are if you use an outsourcer, and by and large, that's an accepted practice. If you look at the first things that went to the cloud, I mean, this is what's really amazing to me is people say, oh, my data could be subject to subpoena and I wouldn't even know about it, or it's subject to being hacked. What are the first things that went to the cloud? Well, where's everyone get their paychecks from? I'm willing to bet that 90% of this room, their companies have outsourced payroll to somebody like ADP that's running a cloud-type operation, and it's your very sensitive payroll data there. Who's using the online version of TurboTax? A fair number of people do that. That's pretty sensitive stuff. Salesforce.com, you're talking about the company's pipeline, sales data. I mean, one of the first things they teach you as a lawyer is trade secrets are important. You need to protect them. That includes your sales list. That includes your prospect list, your customer list. Well, all that's up in the cloud now. And those are the first things that people have moved to. And by and large, you haven't heard of any mass disasters in that area. Certainly nothing worse than what you would see in other types of environments.
Would you agree with that we haven't heard any mass disasters?
No. There are a couple things. First, I think it's very dangerous. I don't think it's more dangerous than other things. Like I said, there are things we do every day that are dangerous, and yet we still do them. But the dangers are different. And I think we need to recognize how they're different so that we can either change how they're dangerous, change the law, change the landscape, or plan for them in case they happen. You mentioned that you have these negotiated SLAs. I think that would be great. And then what are my recommendations?
I don't think they're negotiated SLAs. I think that you do have a choice of SLAs from different vendors, but it is going to be hard to negotiate an SLA with an individual vendor because they've built their operation the way that they've built it. But you do have a choice among vendors, and you can look at SLAs before you sign on the dotted line.
I think that's right. The problem is that a lot of them are bad, and you know they tend to protect the cloud provider, not the cloud consumer. And what they don't do is give you the sort of transparency and the sort of control that you need to solve the problems that we're talking about. And you know, Google was in the news just the other day saying, you know, don't even bother trying to negotiate because we're not moving. Mm-hmm. And you know, people just need to get used to that. And that may be. But you know, when you point out that there are these SLAs, they don't tend to guarantee very much. And the stuff they do guarantee doesn't have very much behind it.
So I think there are two things you have to look at is what is it that's in the SLA and what is behind it? Because both of those are important. And as much as anything, the purpose of an SLA and the penalties that go behind it isn't collecting the penalty. You're never going to get a vendor to step up and give you a penalty that's equivalent to what you lose. What you will get is something that gives them enough pain that they have the incentive to go and do it right. And you know, you're right. There are good cloud providers and bad cloud providers. There are certain things that aren't super sensitive and really don't require the full redundancy. Just like a development environment, are you going to give that the full level of redundancy and such that you would a mission critical ERP app? No. And there's different gradations of cloud. Is the industry immature? Yes, no doubt about it. It's immature, and I think over time, your choices will get better.
Let me ask you this real quick, guys. You brought up SLAs. Now, when people are either outsourcing to a cloud or moving stuff to a cloud where there's an SLA involved with another provider, let's see if you agree with this. It seems to me that that's the point where you can leverage your SLA to the maximum amount. Once you are entrenched in a location, in a multi-year contract agreement, inertia takes over. It's like incumbent congressmen. So I was wondering if you had commentary on that. Practical information, when people move to these clouds, are there any SLA traps to look out for, et cetera?
Yeah, so I think there's two sets of traps that you have to look out for. One's legal and one's technical. And one of the biggest risks that, you know, I'd agree with Richard is lock-in. I mean, you have to make sure that when you move out to a cloud, that you have the ability to go and move out of the cloud and to a different provider or bring it back in-house in the event that things aren't working out for you. And you know, that has a legal component of making sure that your contract gives you the ability to get out. And frankly, I think you'd want some sort of termination for convenience, right? Let alone the ability to get out because of breach of an SLA on it. But the second side of it is the technical side. Have you written your apps in a certain fashion such that they're portable? And you know, with a lot of the cloud infrastructures that you see going up, that's a real risk that you get locked in.
I think that's right. There are a few things I want to point out. First, you mentioned that you know there haven't been big disasters, but I can think of a couple just offhand. Intuit has crashed, has had a few terrible disasters, you know, some of them lasting weeks, right? And it's not to say that there aren't other disasters. They're just different disasters, and you have to plan for them differently. When we say that, you know, your payroll's out in the cloud, the next sentence might be, and isn't that great? Or it might be, holy shit, my payroll data is out in the cloud. I never thought of that. And you know, I think that that's a reasonable response. Maybe it's worth the risk. But I just want to point out that I don't think the next step is necessarily, and isn't that great. But to answer the original question, what about the SLAs? I think that you're right. And there are things you need in the SLAs. The problem is a lot of times they're not there. I think that as cloud computing evolves, some of them will be there. But one of them is, can you get your data if your service is terminated? Well, you need to have the right to it. And the thing you need to know is that even if the contract gives you the right to the data, there are disputes. You know, I was once locked into a taxi cab and the taxi driver demanded money. And my right was to leave, and yet all the doors were locked. So, you know, it's worth, companies do these things. There are huge fights, and they say, you know, we'd be happy to give your data. I had a fight like that about 10 years ago with a company, and they said, we'd be happy to give you your data, but we'd like the money we think you owe us. Well, no. And how do I get it, right? It's not that these problems aren't things you can solve, but I think you need to be aware of them, and some of them are new.
Yeah, I would generally agree with that, but I would also go and point towards outsourcing as a comparison. So, you know, I think you're right when you said there are dangers everywhere, and the comparison is, are you better or worse off by moving to the cloud? And the issues that you raise about getting payment back, you know, getting your data back, being extorted into payment and such, you have a lot of those same risks if you outsource, and you're not going to get the benefits of the economies of a standardized multi-tenant model. Now, I think the standardized multi-tenant model does bring some other risks that go with that. And, you know, you had mentioned subpoenas or discovery requests. Well, the other piece, those are like authorized requests for the information where they get turned over. You know, there's the other question about, well, am I more likely to get hacked? Am I more likely to lose my data that way? And let's leave aside the possibility that your data gets leaked out through a malicious act or a negligent act of the provider. Because again, there's history of that happening with outsourcers as well as the cloud on that. I mean, that's a risk you have when you don't control things. And frankly, even companies have had their own employees go and put stuff out. But if you look at what's the risk of somebody coming in, hacking the system and getting at my data, if the data is sitting in your own data center and you're the only one there, it means that it's a targeted attack on just you. If you are in a cloud environment, and that environment is designed in a fashion where they are not isolating the complete stack of each individual customer from the database layer all the way up through the business logic, then if it gets penetrated anywhere, there's access to all of the client's data. And that is an added risk that you have to worry about. Can it be designed around? Yes. You can. You know, you could go and you could say, I want my own, in essence, VM with everything sitting in it from top to bottom. The reason I don't think you see as much of that yet is twofold. First, where data is highly regulated, things like Gramm-Leach-Bliley on your financial transactions, HIPAA and such, that has been slower moving out to the cloud, and I don't think it will move out until you get the industry to mature to the point of offering more secure SLAs and the infrastructure to go and back it up. But the second thing, which I think is the biggest thing that keeps that from happening, is the current licensing models. If you look at the way software has traditionally been licensed, it is on a per processor basis, and it is designed to generate revenues for the ISVs based upon very low levels of utilization. And you know, the industry is having both a hard time and a little bit of foot dragging in moving to a new model on that, because one, if you're not going to license on a per processor or per instance basis, what is your metric? If you're providing a service, that's a little bit easier because you can do per authorized user, per transaction, that sort of thing. But if you're licensing a database or an ERP app or something, you know, it's a new model that needs to get put into place in order to be able to do that. So what you have under the existing old school licensing model is something that is designed for a dedicated infrastructure as opposed to a multi-tenant infrastructure, and the pricing model is such that if you move to multi-tenancy, your software costs are going to be very high. So when you talk about making each individual tenant on a cloud having more security because they have their own instance of things, it becomes much more expensive.
I think that's an interesting point. I'd add two things. The first is that you're right that some of these things I identify as issues with cloud are also issues with outsourcing or really any third-party control. I don't think that that is a reason, right? The fact that there's danger over here means that we should accept danger over here. A lot of companies are providing their own IT infrastructure and thinking about moving from in-house data to the cloud. And if that's your discussion, then saying, well, you know, it's, you know, third, when you outsource it, it's a problem too. I don't think that really helps them. Now, it's a good point that it's a problem that's been in existence for a while. And, you know, I think that's right. But at the same time, if this is your decision, you know, should I start? Take what I'm doing now. Take software companies, right? Software companies are good at making software, and they used to just ship it out. Now, because they want to offer it as a service, they will do two things. Instead of just making software, they'll make software and they'll host. And maybe they're not very good at hosting. So maybe what they ought to do is move it to a company whose core competency really is doing the hosting. But when they make that decision, they ought to go in with their eyes open, which is to say that you used to have control and you used to have perfect transparency, and now you do not. I think the second important thing is that when we talk about security, I was talking with somebody from Google recently, and he pointed out that because Google sees so many attacks, their security is fantastic. Mm-hmm. I mean, they see so much, right? And that's a really good point. Now, not everybody's Google. But more importantly, we joke about security by obscurity and how terrible it is. But I think we joke a little bit too much. If you're a company that is a small health company that nobody's really interested in, the chances of you being hacked may not be that great. But if you take all that data and put it someplace else into a cloud where there are some really interesting companies that will be really fun to hack for whatever reason, when these people get in and they start pulling data, they've got yours too, and you've lost your obscurity. Now the question is, are you better off with the better security or with the better isolation? And I don't know the answer, I wonder if you do either, but it's at least something to consider.
Yeah, I think you're spot on with that, and it's a case-by-case determination, and as you say, go in with your eyes open and at least understand what your cloud provider is offering. Understand the technology yourself about what you would like to see. I mean, if the choice is, are you going to do it in-house? I think there's typically three choices. Are we going to do this in-house? Are we going to outsource it? Are we going to move to a cloud? Or actually, increasingly, all three. The elements of all three with, you know, covering your spikes and that sort of thing. But, you know, think about what's the security that you would want and see where you get closest to that for the budget that you have.
Okay. And also, I think another thing to think about is, imagine that it's true that your security would be better if you moved to the cloud, but you learned about intrusions sooner if you didn't. So which is better? To make it less likely that there'll be an intrusion, or that you'll learn about it with enough time to handle it? I don't know.
Well, certainly at a minimum, you want to make sure that your contract requires that you get notification as immediately as possible in the event of an intrusion from your cloud provider.
And if only the agreements that the cloud providers offered all said that. And they don't. Yeah. You know, I think you're right, and I think they should, and I think they don't.
Okay, guys, I'm going to ask you pretty soon about private clouds, but I wanted to ask you this. The compelling argument for moving to cloud infrastructures is an economic argument. So, at least that I'm going to assert that first, and if you disagree, that's okay. Just pipe up and tell me if you disagree. But let's say that that's the case. Okay, so there's a spectrum of risks in moving things to that cloud. So say I'm a small business or small company, and that argument is just extremely compelling. So I've heard you tell me there's all these risks, but I have to assume that not all those risks are equal. So if I want to dip my toe in the cloud fog, are there places where I would have a greater likelihood of success or lower risk than others? Can you comment on that?
Yeah. Okay. I think there are certain sorts of applications where you don't want the data to get out, but if it does, it's just not the end of the world, right? At some point, there's data that you just cannot get out. Trade secrets, you probably wouldn't want to put the formula for Coke in the cloud. And then there are gradations in the middle. And, you know, the point I made earlier in my talk was that I'm not anti-cloud. I think it's great for certain things, especially the situation I described with the software companies that just can't do their own hosting as well. But at the same time, there are brand new dangers. And it's completely case by case. You have to look at what are the dangers to you, and what are the risks, and are there things you can either mitigate or just accept? There are some things that you just can't mitigate, and you accept that they can happen. And you just, you can't plan for them because, if you're a software developer, assert statements, right? Assert statement just kills the whole thing because that's just how it is. And you can't plan for everything, and some things are just too expensive to plan for, and you have limited money. But I think you just need to figure out on a case-by-case basis, what are the risks to you, and are they business enders? And are you willing to, to balance this business ender against this business ender?
Okay. Bill, do you want to add to that?
I think I generally agree with it, but I'd probably be a little more emphatic in the sense that, as Richard mentioned, if you're a small company, you have limited money, and there's only so much you can afford, and you're probably better off allocating a higher percentage, especially if you're a startup, of the limited dollars you have to things like R&D and driving sales than you are to trying to create your own IT infrastructure. So what I would recommend is that a small company look to the established services, because what they'll get will be much better quality and security than what you can afford to do on your own. I mean, a small company isn't going to put in a robust CRM system. They're much better off going to Salesforce the whole way around. So I would look at those sorts of things. As you mentioned, the crown jewels, are you going to keep your source code out there for your software product if you're a software company? No, I'd keep that in-house.
Okay. There are large companies that would say, okay, I'm still risk averse, and I want to keep this stuff in-house, but I'd like to use somebody's shared infrastructure, essentially just extending out my internal network to a portion of their infrastructure. I've seen that done. So I'd call that sort of it's a mixed model. It's not completely one way or the other. If you're familiar with that, can you comment there about, are these companies fooling themselves or?
Well, I think that the phenomenon of a hybrid cloud that you're talking about is something that's starting to take shape, but there's still a fair bit of work in order to make it a really viable option. One of the places that we're starting to see, I guess you could call them hybrid clouds, is by the outsourcers. Some of them are offering certain things on a multi-tenant basis to go and supplement the dedicated infrastructures that some of their clients have sitting in their cages with them. And that's compelling economics. You're also seeing individual applications get moved 100% to the cloud. What you're talking about is getting peak capacity. So you're into it, your TurboTax is your big product, and from January through April, you have this huge surge, you need the extra capacity. Can you go and move that outside at a cheaper cost? I think one of the things that's making that difficult right now is that applications have to be written to the cloud. You need to have a particular standard that you're writing to, and the standards haven't developed as much as I think they will over time. So yes, it's something that's showing promise, but I think it's in its infancy, at least in terms of what we're seeing. From a legal standpoint, though, are there barriers to doing that? I'd come back to some of the points that Richard made, is if what you are looking to be able to do is, in essence, have overflow capacity, you'd better make sure that you've got the ability to get your data back, both from a substantive and a legal standpoint.
The only thing I want to add is that if you're, that's a great example, TurboTax. If you're an accountant and you're using, say, something from Intuit, Intuit had like 4 weeks of failures. That's okay if you can wait, maybe do the work later, stamp late. But if you're an accounting company and it's the end of March, beginning of April, end of March, beginning of April, that might be the end, right? This is when you make your money. And if you're relying on someone else, you better be sure that you can do that. Now, there are backup plans you can have, but Mark Twain once said that a fool says, don't put all your eggs in one basket. Put all your eggs in one basket and watch that basket. Now, maybe, but maybe not. And I think that if it's really bet the company, you ought to think about whether getting that peak capacity advantage when you need it is worth potentially getting nothing when you need it.
Okay, the dangers that I was worried about was not due to in peak capacity situations, but I'll give you an example. Okay, so IBM has a large data center in Colorado. Defense contractor is going to extend out to them, and hopefully, as you pointed out, they've got their area pretty well compartmented, so they can say, yes, definitively, we've segmented this piece of our upscaled infrastructure for you. One worry is, well, how many non-citizen workers do you have? I can't have that. There may be things like that in other industries. And I'll make some up, but in a HIPAA situation, there might be similar things that I just can't have X. And what I found out from Richard's talk is perhaps they've lied about or not well represented their capacity. So can you maybe expand on those risks a little bit? You mentioned that there's been disasters. So is this a exceptions, or are you finding that there's more of those that didn't well represent how they were structured than perhaps you'd be comfortable with?
Well, it's so early. I mean, you're getting, cloud today is not the same as cloud in 2 months. So I think it's, what we're usually doing is we're looking at these risks and trying to extrapolate from other things that have happened. I mean, outsourcing is one big one. You mentioned HIPAA. There are companies that outsourced information to India to do data processing, which is great for costs, except that it turns out there are different laws there, right? Same attorneys were outsourcing things to other countries and finding that the data was just getting sold because there are no laws to prevent that. Even if there were, nobody cares. So it's hard to know whether they're going to lie or make mistakes. And it's hard to know if their lies or mistakes are different than the lies or mistakes that you'll get in your own organization. But I think it's really too early to tell. It's just, it's yet another thing you need to think about. And the push for cloud audit now, I think, is very important. That will solve many problems, not all the problems, but a standard audit, I think, by which companies can say, we have been audited in this way, we're now compliant with A6 or whatever we're compliant with, will go a long way to solving that problem.
Yeah, I think there are two different risks that you have there. The first is the one that you were just talking about in terms of some sort of intentional misrepresentation or negligence, in terms of compliance. The one that I think is bigger is the unknown. Just you're dealing with somebody who doesn't understand all of the regulations that apply to that particular area. So going back to your example about, it's a Department of Defense project and only U.S. citizens are allowed to have something to do with it. If you go with somebody like IBM, they're experienced enough, they're going to know that. But you have a lot of emerging companies in the cloud space, and your next Google could very well be coming from there, and the question is, do the people know those restrictions? There are a couple other areas that we see come up as concerns for people about the cloud quite a bit. The biggest one is, if you talk to a European, their single biggest concern is that the data is going to be moved. They don't know where the cloud is located, and they are concerned that the data that they are putting into it will physically end up in a country that is not deemed to be acceptable from data privacy standpoints. Now, there are ways around that. I mean, if you're a provider and you know about this, you can make sure that you've safe harbor qualified in each of the areas where you are and that sort of thing. But if you have somebody who's not attuned to the fact that, one, they may not know what data that you're putting in there. They may not know what it's being protected, so that may be the source of the problem, or they may not know what the legal restriction is because they're new to the business. And those are things that, I think you protect yourself by being upfront as much as you can and doing your due diligence on, what are the risks that I have if I keep it in-house, and then those are the same risks that have to get addressed when it's out in the cloud.
Okay. Richard introduced something in the last session. He said that there is, there's different state laws, 45 different state laws, I believe you said, out of 50 states or something like
45
that.
45 plus DC.
Okay. So does that mean the other four or five simply don't have
specific laws?
Wow. Okay. You mentioned one in particular, which I found intriguing. You mentioned that Massachusetts has this law that says you have to keep your operating system up to date, keep it patched, things like that. So, I'm sitting here scratching my head and going, but I've put something out in the cloud. I don't really know where the heck it might wound up. I mean, they've told me where their data centers are, but maybe they're load balancing. Can you help me understand, well, if I'm here in California and I've hired a provider whose headquarters is in Colorado, I mean, or in Massachusetts, when does that Massachusetts law apply to any of my data?
So, I'm not a Massachusetts lawyer, so that.
But you look like one.
My accent isn't right. So, but a lot of the laws are the two examples I gave where Utah and Massachusetts have to do with keeping data of a person from Massachusetts. So if you have, wherever you're located, they want to regulate the data that is, their citizens' data. But it's so new. I mean, there was an article yesterday about how small companies are just getting demolished trying to adhere to this new thing because they never had to do it before. They were always too small or weren't in the right segment. So while big companies always had the some similar solutions, small companies had never even faced it before. And I think that there are some answers we don't know, how the interplay with state laws, because they're going to differ. Right? Some will have different requirements than others, are going to play out.
So, I think there you're in a situation where it doesn't matter whether you're in a cloud or whether you're doing it through outsourcing or in-house, in the sense that all of the regulations that I'm aware of around data privacy, privacy is the main one, but they apply to you as the owner of the data, no matter where you keep it. And what you're doing is making a decision as to how you're going to implement your infrastructure that gives you the best and most cost-effective way of meeting all of your obligations, including that one. So if you're taking data from somebody from Massachusetts, even if you're doing it, here in California in your own data center, you still have to comply with those laws. And you get to the question of who's going to be better at doing that, you or an outsourcer or a cloud provider who's used to dealing with customers from multiple different states.
I think that's right, although there are certain added requirements, right? So HIPAA requires, if you outsource at all, that you have business associate agreements.
Yeah.
Try and get a cloud provider to sign one of those. That's a negotiation. And so I think that there are additional, anytime you outsource, you have some of these problems. It just becomes more obvious in cloud.
Well, okay, guys, I hate to say it, but I got more confused because you told me that some of this, the law applies to, well, but you said it equally, so darn it. You said the law applies to the owner of the data, but you also mentioned location. So I'm still confused. So let me just posit an example for you, which is actually pretty real world. Okay, my employer has population centers both in California and in Massachusetts. There's probably people like that out here too. Let's say I hire a cloud provider who's got a data center in Massachusetts and Colorado. Okay, so I've contracted him, we're doing well. Sometimes, help me understand, let me try to ask it this way. Sometimes the information or the law applies to the owner of the data, which it seems to me is the operator of the data center. But sometimes I thought you mentioned, okay, good. I am kind of confused. I kind of want to clear this up. And what happens when that guy, that service provider says, okay, today your data is resident over here in this data center, but because I like to provide up-to-date services, I'm going to vMotion or do something to move that data over here for an indeterminate amount of time in a completely different data center. Are different laws applying there now simply because I've moved the data to a different jurisdiction?
Okay, so you have several different kinds of laws that may be at play here.
And go slow because this is confusing.
Okay, so let's start with the law that Richard mentioned from Massachusetts, and keep me honest with this because you're more familiar with it than I am. But there are a number of states that have laws that say, we are going to protect what gets done with the data of our citizens, of the citizens of our state. So if you are a company that has gone and collected data from your customers from all over the country, for those customers who are located in Massachusetts, you as the collector and holder of the data are responsible for making sure that the safeguards required by Massachusetts are in place because you have Massachusetts citizens' data in your collection as part of it. And that's true no matter where the data happens to be located.
And that's not really, it doesn't even really apply as far as customers or not. It could just as well be employees, right?
It could be employees. Right. It could be okay. Whoever is the protected class under the statute there,
okay.
The state statute. So irrespective of whether you hold the data in your own data center, whether you have it in an outsourced data center, or whether you have it in the cloud, you are responsible for making sure that the safeguards, the minimum safeguards mandated by the state of Massachusetts, are in place on that. You have a second class, a second set of laws that are aimed at the movement of data. And they're predominantly, the most prominent ones at least, are out of Europe. And they say you will not move personally identifiable information outside of the European Union unless certain things have been met on that. And the risk that you get to there is in the first case, with respect to Massachusetts saying you have to meet these minimum standards of protection, you can go and enter into a contract with your provider, whether it's an outsourcer or a cloud provider, whereby they commit to putting that minimum level of protection in place on it. On the other hand, though, if you're dealing with the European type of statute that says you will not move that data, even if they were to move it to a place that would meet all of the applicable standards for protection, if they haven't signed up to the appropriate strictures of the data privacy rules, it would be unlawful for that data to be moved to a jurisdiction outside of the European Union. So you would want to make sure that your provider is not only saying we will provide these minimum levels of protection, but also that we will not move the data any place that doesn't qualify for an exemption under the European regulations.
I agree with these additions. One is that it turns out, I think we heard in the last 2 weeks, that companies are claiming that they're part of the Safe Harbor program, and they're not. When we talk about whether they're going to lie, companies are saying they are, and they just happen not to be.
Can I cue you up for Safe Harbor and explaining Safe Harbor to us non-law guys?
You may be better at that than I am. But the general idea is that you enter this program by which you promise to abide by the privacy strictures that are strict enough for the European Union's rules. And if you're, Google's a member. And so they fit into the Safe Harbor exception. The other type of law that we talked about, state law, which tend to cover the person about whom whose data it is. In other words, if I'm from Massachusetts and you have my data, that's what matters. Sometimes they may apply just to any company that's inside Massachusetts or whatever state it is. Another kind of law, you also have federal, international law, state law, you have federal law. And HIPAA, for instance, applies not just to the companies that have the data, but also to any companies to which they give the data. And so if you can give the data to another company, they become a business associate, and you have to get them to agree to a business associate agreement. Now, they are a business associate. Whether you figured out that you had to get them to agree to this or not is immaterial. And so they're going to have to abide by certain rules also.
Okay. I'm still a little confused. I want to remove the EU out of the equation. Not anything against my EU brothers, but it's another variable, so I want to dial it down. If I can get back to the scenario that I posited to you, though, it sounds like I think what you're telling me is here's your provider, and you have some sort of responsibility to tell him, the data is coming from these jurisdictions. It's up to you, Mr. Provider, to keep up with the requirements of each of those jurisdictions. Is that a correct assessment?
Yeah, that is a correct assessment, but the way that it plays out is a little bit mixed in the sense that, yes, you are correct that you as the customer, as the owner of the data, are responsible for ensuring that all laws have been complied with on it. You can go to your provider, whether it's a cloud provider or an outsourcer, and say, we want you to represent and warrant to us and give us an SLA that you will stay in compliance with all of these different laws and any other law that may apply and any amendments that get made to them. In most cases, the provider is likely to say, we can't do that. We're not experts in this area. We're just data hosting guys, and we know some of the big ones. There are certain cases where you have providers that specialize in services in particular areas, and this is where I think at least the SaaS providers are probably going to be better because they are focused in a particular industry where they will recognize that they have a better core competency at staying on top of things than the individual customers do, and that they will want, they'll be more willing to take that on and design that feature into their service and make it a selling factor.
I think that's right. I think we're going to see a lot more companies who can do HIPAA very well, especially as we get electronic health records.
Yeah.
As that grows, you're just going to have, it's going to be a huge growth industry. Even though it's small now, I think it'll ramp up pretty quickly.
Okay. I want to remind the audience that, please step up to the microphone. I don't want to be, the only guy coming up with questions here. If you have questions, please step up. Don't be shy. You mentioned HIPAA, and that's probably a good stepping stone. There's a healthcare law that just got passed in the United States, and I was wondering if it had additional implications, for hosting your private health records in cloud providers. Does it ease it? Is it, agnostic?
I don't know that it does. What I do know is that the stimulus had funding for electronic health records, and so there are already deadlines that hospitals and doctors will have to meet, and they're all being extended because it's so hard.
Yeah, I mean, just from the little that I know of the situation. By the way, if anyone's interested, there's a fascinating book on the different healthcare systems around the world and how they work called The Healing of America. Very interesting. But one of the things that they identify as perhaps the single greatest cost driver of our system, why we pay more than anybody else in the world for a lower level of care, is the high administrative costs, with much of that being associated with the fact that our records either are not digitized or the processes that are used to handle them, to go, in particular, the processing of insurance claims, are all different from company to company. And at the end of the day, if we're going to go and get the cost out of the healthcare sector that we need to balance, to make Medicare solvent and such, that is going to have to get addressed. Whether the extent to which that is being taken on in the current bill, I don't know. But over time, I think you will see that, and you will see coming out of that an opportunity for cloud vendors to come in with the specialized offerings that go and meet those requirements.
Okay. That was The Healing of America, you said?
Healing of America, written by a guy by the name of T.R. Reid, who's a Washington Post reporter.
Okay. One of the first encounters that people might have, let's say outside of a work environment, is the Amazon cloud. And I'm wondering if there's any, it's a well-known cloud. It's one of the first ones. There are some things there where they don't have, or at least they used to not have, a guarantee that your data will stay there. Are there any special, gotchas, things to look out for that you've encountered in your practices about, people using particular well-known clouds like Amazon, even other, large data center areas that you can think of? I mean, you already mentioned Intuit, here's an example of something that, people readily use.
Here's a thing I've been thinking about, and I think we talked about this earlier. Google offers cloud services for free for some people, right? It seems like it's for free, except what they really want is your data. So you're paying with your information. That may be fine. But what happened when I started thinking about it was I thought, I just imagined this conversation at Google where one person said, we're indexing everything on the web, and that's great, but there's all this information that's on people's computers. If we could just index that, that would be fantastic, because we use all that information for advertising and other things. And someone else said, well, yeah, we'll just get them to send it to us. And I was at IBM on a similar panel, and we were talking about that with someone from Google afterwards, and he said, oh, yeah, that's the conversation we had. They want to have your data indexed. They want to be able to get to it. They want it, to look at it and use it for various things. And maybe that's fine, but you should at least think about it. The question is, what does your agreement with your cloud provider permit them to do? I think it's pretty important to make sure that it does not permit them to sell your data, and then everything else is shades of gray.
really matter?
Yeah, I think to some extent the issues that you raise depend upon what it is you're doing in the cloud. So if you are going and getting a pure service that is 100% end-to-end, let's take Google as an example. You are using their search engine. They will take data from you. I mean, they look at that as their data, what you're searching for, what the search patterns are, and they go out and they sell advertising based on that. If you go to the opposite extreme, where you're looking at something that is an infrastructure as a service cloud or maybe a platform as a service cloud, and you're getting your own little virtual environment to go develop apps or put your own stack on, the risks of that, of the provider going and claiming that that is their data and that they have the right to use it and sell it and such are far less. Obviously, you want to make sure that your contracts are written in an appropriate fashion on that, but the information is something that is the product of a service that the provider is offering to you, like the Google search, the more likely you are that the terms are going to be it's ours and not yours, and there's nothing you can do about that other than pick a different search engine.
Okay, let's examine that for a second. So I want to look at what would be a prudent model to have when I've got a good service provider. In other words, I could feel comfortable that most of my legal bases are covered, my risk is lower. So let's start with a very, very simple approach. I'm not asking for a service. I'm just asking for off-site storage. I just need you to store my stuff. It is my stuff. I don't want you to do anything else other than safeguard it. Are there particular things you would, suggest, hey, make sure, X, Y, or Z is covered in the contract that you have with these people? And in particular, since many of these cases are going to be click wraps, they're not going to be custom contracts, in other words.
Okay. Go ahead. Well, if you're just storing data, they really ought to have no right to look at it at all, except for the most minimal inspection for purely administrative purposes. Now, you can try and enforce that by contract, and that's a thing you should do. If it's storage, what possible reason do they have? Now, you mentioned that it's a click wrap. In that case, if they don't provide that kind of protection, you may want to move on. But sometimes you can't for price reasons or other reasons, in which case you might want to store it encrypted, in which case, they can look at anything they want, and it's not going to help.
Okay. Bill, do you want to add to that?
No, I would agree with that.
Okay, now let's step up. Okay, now they're storing my data. I'm a happy camper. I've still got some stuff here, and I know that they're cheaper than I am, so that, again, that's the gravity pulling me towards them. Perhaps I want to do some computations with them. People have large data centers. They do technical computation. They'd like to see, perhaps as a quick peak capacity use, is there, again, what are things to look out for there? Just like you just now said with, no right to look at it, et cetera.
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Okay. Well, I'm just sort of, go ahead.
So let me give an example and see if it's what you're talking about. You're an oil company and you've got a bunch of well logs that have come in and you want to go and analyze them. And you really need access. It's a lot of data. You need access to a grid to go and crunch the numbers and come out with your analysis. The scenario is we want to go and rent the grid. We don't want to build our own grid. We want to be able to rent it, and it's a third-party offering. What do we look for in that case? Or a Monte Carlo simulation? Is it something like
right.
that?
Right, and in fact, maybe some of the things I might want to look for would be like, okay, but once I'm done with you and I've paid for the service that I have, that you no longer keep my data after a certain point.
Right.
Because I haven't been in that situation where, okay, I want to end my relationship now. I might crank it up later, but I want to end this relationship now. Any special things to look out for there?
So what I've seen in those types of situations is there are two different scenarios that I see that arise in. The first is a single event. And again, the oil industry is a good example of that. You've got a huge batch of data that's come in. You've done a bunch of of prospecting work, you want to go and analyze it, you pretty much know how much time and how much capacity you need for from the grid. So you want to make sure that the grid is giving you the power that you need, that it will run the types of applications that you need to on it. How you get the data onto it is always a bit of a challenge, you know, load times and that sort of thing. And then you want to make sure that it comes back to you at the end. So you want to know, you know, that you do have the right to get it back, how it's coming back. You want to know whether the, you know, whether everything has been wiped clean off of the, you know, the systems that you're leaving it on. You know, so that's a fairly short term. I've also seen situations where, and the financial industry is more involved in this that I've seen, where they know they're going to be running a lot of Monte Carlo simulations, and they don't want to build their own grid, or they want to have excess peaking capacity. And typically what I've seen in those cases is that they want a single dedicated infrastructure to them, but they want the ability to get out of it at pretty much any given time. So I think what you're looking for there, in addition to all the other things, is making sure that you've got the right termination rights. And typically, the more you want to be able to terminate on short notice, the more you're going to pay for it. It's just like buying an airline seat. You buy it in advance, you book it for, you know, defined flight, it's relatively cheap. You want to be able to get in or get out at the last moment, you pay more.
Right. So when you're giving your data over to someone else, it ought to be yours. Unless it's not, you know, like I said, giving another person, another company data is a method of payment, right? If it's valuable to them and it's valuable to you, then it's just like giving them money. And that's something you need to negotiate, right? Maybe it's worth it to you to let them have a copy of it. Maybe it's worth it to you not to let anybody have a copy.
Okay. We talked about excess or peak capacity in terms of hardware. Let's talk about, let's say you need to do the same thing, but you need to use proprietary software. Okay, so this could be good. So things like, you know, HFSS licenses, Cadence licenses. Sometimes vendors throw things at us non-cloud oriented in situations like where they say, okay, you can use this, but there's a geographical restriction on the license. You can use it 30 miles out. Your other site is 50 miles out, too bad, you're going to have to pay an additional license. Are there models right now where cloud offerers provide proprietary licenses? I just don't know. And if there are there additional gotchas to look out for there, or are they basically the same sort of licensing gotchas that you would find in-house?
Go ahead and follow up.
I think you ought to start. It sounds like okay. You're...
Okay. So this is, I think, one of the single biggest issues in the progression to the cloud that exists today, is what is the software licensing model and how do you make it work? And you raise one question, which is, what right do you have as the owner of the application? You want to move something out to the cloud for additional peaking capability. Can you use your existing licenses to go and do that? And you will see a variety of different provisions. Some will let you, some won't.
Or theirs.
Well, we'll get to that in a second.
Okay.
So this is, again, very similar to an outsourcing situation. You've got all your licenses. You want to outsource. You want to turn over your data center to somebody else. You want to move it to IBM or to EDS or whomever. Do you have the right to do that? In most cases, there's no issue with that. The software companies will let you go ahead and do that. Second scenario is can the provider get a license that will cover you? General answer to that is yes. Where things get really tricky is what is the price of that license going to be, particularly if you're running on a heterogeneous cloud that has multiple different applications in it. And this could be a purely private cloud within your data center or a completely public cloud that is external. And the issue that you run into is where you have traditional licensing models, things like per CPU, the whole nature of a cloud is that it's stateless and that you can have certain applications expand while others contract and vice versa. How many processors do you have to go and purchase your license for? And if you look at some of the more traditional companies, Their view is the metric is per processor. If it can move around, you buy for the entire size of the cloud, irrespective of the number of CPUs that you're actually using.
Wow. Okay. I'm digesting that one. Does anybody else have any other questions, by the way? I just want to keep prodding folks. Rick?
I don't know, Mario. You've done a great job of prodding, but I've heard some of the earlier talk, and you were talking about, you know, some of the talk is around putting your data in the cloud, and how it's funny because I was asked by someone I know who works for a large government agency about having a cloud, and the first thing I pointed out to them is they no longer own their data. And it's really nice to hear somebody
else. Can you speak closer to the microphone?
I'm sorry.
Thanks.
Yeah, I'm hearing an echo, so it seems like it's okay. Better?
You're better.
Yeah. Just stay close.
Okay. So I was asked by somebody at a government organization, what about moving into the cloud? And I gave them pretty much the answer you did, which makes me feel a little bit more confident about my answer, which is essentially that they no longer control their data. You also were talking about the issue of somebody going in and subpoenaing certain data, and so the data is going to be mixed, which really comes down to when I look at storage solutions for cloud storage, the data is terribly mixed. There's really, you might have something that is like a large filer in the back end, essentially, and it's all block storage. So those large blocks are being allocated, they're being freed, and there's no guarantee that what you write is going to be deleted anytime soon. Dan Farmer and Vidzi Venema wrote a book about digital forensics. They finished it about 7 years ago. What they found is that even on very busy systems, if they wrote like a pattern and they watched the system over a period of a year, they could still find that pattern after a year. And depending on how busy the system was, how full the hard drives were. So the data really never goes away. I guess that was really my comment. It seems like if you give somebody else your data, you can never have a guarantee, especially in the cloud, that the data is gone. I mean, if you're in DOD, you have to destroy the hard disk. You can't destroy the hard disk when that hard disk belongs to somebody else. So I don't know if that's really a question, but...
Well,
yeah,
so
I'm trying to free up Mario for a second.
That's
here.
Okay. Let's turn it up.
He's doing a good job.
Let's turn it into a question then. So,
thank you.
What can be done to try to mitigate that risk? I'm assuming you can have contracts that say, you know, okay, you're going to do some kind of free space wipe, et cetera. How good are those clauses? Are they enforceable? You guys want to take a shot at that?
Well, I'd start with the technology rather than the clause. And you know, your example of can you put data in a cloud and comply with a DoD requirement that you destroy the hard drive? Probably not. You know, that is not a good use case, I think, for putting the data in the cloud.
Right.
So you know, I would come back to the point of understand what you're looking for in the way of security and certainty on this. Look at what your options are. Is that something that you have the ability to do economically in-house? Is it something that you'd be better off giving to an outsourcer or giving to a cloud provider? And I think the answers to that are going to be fact-specific.
I think we can make it sound even worse. If you like thinking about storage, go talk to the guys from NEC who have a deduping system where every time... You know, say you and I are both on the same system and you store something that's similar at the chunk level, whatever they define as mine, they store it once and they just remember that two of us want it, right? I mean, that stuff is really mixed. And yeah. One thing you want to think about is when there's a subpoena, how do they turn it over? Well, they'll sit down and try and divide it out. The problem, I think, is that when the data is mixed like that, and I don't mean in that technical sense, but when the data is mixed in a cloud situation, they may end up giving over more. One of the cases that's like that is when there's a problem. You ask for this information discovery, and for some reason they don't give up what they want to give up. So the other side goes to the judge and says, they didn't give us what they were supposed to give us, and the judge has in the past ordered to give over backup tapes. hand over the backup tapes. Well, now you're given over everything, right? Another thing to think about is if the government shows up, right, there's a good chance that they're just going to pick up the whole thing and walk with it, in which case they have all the stuff that's intermixed, even if they just take a copy.
Hi, my name is Joel Huddleston. I've been a sysadmin for a long time, and one of the things that it strikes me from this conversation is the intrinsic difference between, I'm using finger quotes and I hate that, intellectual property versus real property. And the fact that our real property laws, and I'm not a lawyer, sysadmin, so you know, keep the conversation down in my level, please. But our property laws come to us from way on back there when we're talking about sheep and horse carts and things like that, and now we're trying to force fit this concept of, well, it's my data, I own it. How can you own something that can be replicated instantly a million times? You can't. A sheep can't be replicated a million times without a great deal of effort, but it can be done, all right? But a song or a movie or someone's home and home address, all of these things could be replicated instantly, and it just seems that the standard of care that is required when someone else has your sheep is very, very different from the standard of care when someone has your customer list. So how does the current law address that intrinsic difference between those two things? Or does it?
I think conceptually it's interesting to think about. I used to work at a large firm, and we represented Microsoft in a Supreme Court case against AT&T. And we were having lunch after the oral argument, and I was talking to the Microsoft General Counsel, and I was telling about a speech I'd seen recently where a guy said, you know, if you have an Apple and I have an Apple, and I give you my Apple and you give me your Apple, then we each have one Apple. But if I have an idea and you have an idea and I give you my idea and you give me your idea, now we each have two ideas. And Ted Olson, who's the guy who was arguing the case, very smartly pointed out that it was saying Apple was a bad idea at the table with Microsoft. but I think the point you make is right. But you know, the law has evolved pretty sophisticated ways to figure out who owns data in the way you would think. Unlike ideas, which are very difficult to figure out who owns them, you think of data as not being physical, but it sort of is, right? It's physically represented. So it's not completely non-physical.
Yeah, I guess what I would add to that is there's the legal side of it in terms of who has the rights to it, and then there's the question of what people are really doing with it. And you know, just look at the open source movement. There are a number of instances that have come up, and it's not limited to software. I mean, you'll see the same thing with music. You have artists that want to get out there, and you have people making judgments all the time that even though they have the rights in this, they may be better off, in essence, relinquishing those rights or compromising them by putting the information out in the public domain because they think they'll get some other benefit from it, whether it's psychic, monetary, or otherwise. And you know, increasingly, that is happening.
Yeah, I think it's one of the newer problems is for composers and musicians who create music for video games. You know, and what's a performance?
Yeah, I guess I'm a little less interested in license-type material and more like a comparison of a cloud computing model as whether that is I've taken my car down to the garage, and the guy at the garage is going to fix my car for me, and then he's going to give me my car back, and there's an expectation that while he's fixing my car, he's going to be taking it apart and putting it back together, and there may be disasters that occur. His shop may collapse or something along those lines, or somebody might break into the shop and steal my car, versus the model where I rent a storage unit, and I take my stuff down to the storage unit, and I put it inside there, and I lock it up. Okay, and the storage unit has my stuff. The guy at the garage has my car. They've both got possession of my things, right? But for very different reasons, and there's a different expectation under the law for, because I read my rental contract one time and I was very frightened because I didn't understand half of it. Okay, but I was agreeing to it, otherwise I couldn't store my stuff, and that's what I really wanted, was to store my stuff. Okay, but there seems to be a very different standard of care for these two use cases. Okay, and so when I go out to the cloud, am I taking my car to the shop and having their computer work on my car in the shop, or am I taking my stuff down to the warehouse that I have rented that only belongs to me and storing my stuff there?
Which scenario is it closest to, or is it just not?
No, you're not.
It's entirely unlike either of those.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the response that I would have is that in those cases, the duty of care that's owed to you is what's defined in the contract. And, you know, in a perfect market, you would be able to get, you would find a provider who would give you whatever duty of care that you want. The reality is that in a number of cases, you're going to be in the same situation going to a cloud provider that you will in going to your rental storage unit, where this is the contract, you take it or you don't.
The reason I said no, it's not either of those things, is you happen to pick two things that have their own interesting histories. You know, a mechanic gets a mechanic's lien on your car.
That wasn't a mistake. I did that on purpose.
Right. He gets a mechanic's lien on your car, and it's not like that. And in a storage unit, you know, they have the right to sell this stuff, usually. It's probably not like that either. It's more like some of your everyday things where you don't have to worry about mechanics liens and you don't have to worry about storage companies. But also, I think that it's the analogies to property rights end up being somewhat similar, right? If you think of land, right, it's not just owning land. There's the right to use land. There are easements. You can rent it. Multiple people can use the same general area at the same time. So it's not as far off as you might think.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to follow up with the confiscation question. You, in the previous session, you posited this scenario of, hey, you've got a great relationship with your cloud provider, and you've got your data over there, but because of multi-tenancy, a bad tenant comes along, and he's got, you know, kiddie porn at the worst, but it's something that attracts law enforcement. Law enforcement comes along and says, excuse me, but we need to take this now and take the whole thing out of commission. So, you know, I'm jotting this note down, and I made a mental note, holy cow, how much jeopardy do I have here in my current situation? My first question is, well, is that an implied scenario, or is that a real scenario that has actually happened?
Well, when I first thought of it, I was making it up. And the reason I picked an example of a really bad guy who was doing child porn is that child porn, unlike some things, you know, evidence in a fraud case, for instance, is contraband. And the FBI doesn't leave that stuff around. They take it all and destroy it. But you ask if it's a real case. And initially it wasn't until it turned out it was. And the FBI came and shut down a data center and carted everything away. And, you know, they carted down, out switches and racks. And, you know, not just computers, and power strips, which you have to forgive them for because they probably didn't have enough power strips to deal with all the computers. And the customers asked for it back, and they couldn't have it back. When, you know, I represented someone very recently who was, you know, when you're in a federal investigation, you start off as a subject. And then if it gets bad, you become a target. And if it gets better, you become a witness. Target bad, witness good. He was a witness, and yet they kept his computers, his BlackBerry, for months and months. And, you know, they took it apart and they tried to recover things that were deleted and, you know, all the things they do. And they took them longer because, you know, recovering deletions from BlackBerries is more difficult. And things get deleted all the time, right? And they needed to get all that stuff, and they can keep it for a very long time. Not only is it a real problem in that it's possible, the real problem in that it's happened. My guess is it will happen again because, you know, there's a lot of this stuff out there. And in the case where they shut down the data center in Texas, it was a fraud case. It wasn't anything like, you know, some of the really awful things you might think about.
No, and that's go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, so let me elaborate on that and give you another example that's a risk. Is what happens if your co-tenant on the cloud introduces a virus? I mean, it's a bad actor, and you know, they're going to introduce malware of some sort or another into the system. And you know, I think multi-tenancy brings its own risks that come with it. If you look at the way the outsourcers do it or the hosting facilities, you have separate cages for everybody's infrastructure, and you're relying on a common physical facility, you know, some common networking maybe, and you know, perimeter security and such, but you're depending upon your separate cage and that isolation, that physical separation of, in essence, your data center from the guy sitting next to you in the next cage for protection from these sorts of things. In a cloud, you're not going to be able to get that same type of physical separation, but you may be able to go and put virtual separation in place that will give you added protection from the introduction of problems by another tenant. You know, that raises the question of, you know, in your case, if everything had been nicely zipped up in a VM for this particular bad actor, would they have been able to go and just seize that component, that virtual block, out of the cloud? I don't know the answer to that, but you've got a better chance of the answer being yes if you have some sort of internal partitioning that's protecting you than having everything completely commingled.
Yeah, I think that's right. The problem with some of this is that, you know, the FBI may not just trust you.
Sure.
You know, there's trust us, there's nothing else on those other servers. That all seem to be in the same thing. And, you know, being in several places, if it's all the same company, may not solve it, right? The FBI has plenty of trucks and plenty of agents, and they'll just show up to all the data centers if they think it's real bad. So I think the virus is a really interesting case, although a good provider should be able to, in some way, recover from a clean backup. In the case of the government showing up, there's nothing to recover from because you don't have any machines anymore. Even if you did, you don't have any backups anymore. And even if you did, the FBI would realize that you have them and probably take them too. But again, I don't mean to say that that's a reason you shouldn't go to cloud. It's a reason you should think about not going to cloud. But you know, you really can't mitigate all risks. You can mitigate some risks. And at some point, you need to draw a line and say, that's just too much. You know, I mentioned that I'm a cave diver, and we dive into underwater caves. And we plan for tons of things. Redundancy on redundancy on redundancy. At some point, you stop. Because it's just too many things to go wrong to plan for. And if you really think that that's going to go wrong, then you just won't do it.
Okay. I think you've made a really nice argument for, if you're going to use a cloud, use the biggest cloud you can find. I mean, when you have a cloud provider like Amazon who has literally warehouses full of equipment, and it'll be impossible to actually locate where the data is, but it's also going to be impossible. I mean, the only thing they could do would be to take over the entire compound, which might be warehouses all across the United States, which is, you know, that would be very unlikely, and so probably the safest thing you could do.
Well, you're thinking about that because you think of Amazon as a good actor, but imagine a company that was in bed with the mob, right?
Right.
They'll just post a guard, right? Cut the power, post a guard.
So they'll just what? Excuse me?
They'd cut the power and post a guard.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's not impossible.
No, it's not impossible.
Thinking of, you know, Amazon, they would never do that kind of thing. But, you know, the mob controls big things, and they go after the mob, and they take down all kinds of things. So it's not impossible. It's just not impossible.
No. Well, actually, I also suggested that it might be, if you really wanted somebody's data, the best person to hire would be the person who's the disk monkey, the guy who goes around and replaces corrupt, you know, failed hard drives. And so there's somebody who has perfect access, they're already doing it, everybody expects that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing, and they have access to loads of data. Who knows what they're going to find doing that? So there's interesting scenarios there. Okay.
We're getting towards the end. We're about 20 minutes after the hour. Do you guys want to make any final observations, closing statements?
Oh, well... you know, I think I just summarize what we've said, that the cloud's a journey, and it's a tool that is in your infrastructure to, or in your quiver, to decide whether it works for you or whether it doesn't. And you know, I think Richard's pointed out a number of times, and aptly, there are risks. There are risks with any of the solutions, and you have to look and see what fits best for you. You know, in doing this, protect yourself legally. There's always the risk that people won't comply with agreements, but you're better off having the agreement in place the first time than not. So I also think that things will change over time, that the cloud is in its infancy, and that you will see more options become available over time.
I think that's, first I want to end by agreeing on something. So two lawyers and three opinions. But I think that's right. It's all getting better. And my purpose in, you know, if somebody walked up to me after the talk and said, this is the most scary talk of the whole thing, fantastic, that's what I was looking for. But not because it's Halloween, right? It's because I think that if you go in with your eyes open, then you know what the risks are and you're better able to mitigate them. Cloud has different risks than some things and it's the same risk as some things, right? And the cloud is completely new. It's part third party, right? Part is control problem, part of transparency problem, and it shares these problems with different infrastructure, but it, you know, when it's all together, it's unique. And I think if you recognize these problems ahead of time, you can do two things. First, you can decide whether this is for you, right? As was pointed out before, you know, some things, DoD stuff, may not be ripe for Amazon. On the other hand, some things are perfect for the cloud, and it's, you know, if the data gets out, it's not that big a deal. The other thing is you can prepare in the micro level for what happens when these things happen. You know, you have disaster recovery plans in your systems, right? You need that sort of thing. What do I do? You know, can I move my stuff off this cloud and onto a different cloud if I need to, and do I have a copy of it to do it, right? You probably, in your large systems, have dual internet connections to different providers, right? In case one shuts down, for whatever reason, you have this backup one, it's not as good, but it'll work for now, right? And you need to figure out whether that's something you can do just until you get back up and running. So the point of this really is to make sure that people know what the risks are, and not to say that you can't use cloud because of them, but, you know, are these things we can solve? Can we change the law to solve them? Can we change our agreements to solve them? And the things we can't solve, the best thing to do is to know about them and be able to deal with them if something goes wrong.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and end it there. I do want to end on a note that, you know, Usenix is a nonprofit outfit. I do know that you guys had to travel here, take time out of your day. We have high caliber people sitting at this panel, and I really appreciate that you guys decided to do that. I'm pretty sure we did not pay you exorbitant sums to be here. So thank you very much.